vision. Like Barons, he spoke differently when he was deeply pissed off or offended. Barons got softer. Riordan went all upper-crust British formal and precise, enunciating each word crisply. I shrugged his hands off my shoulders. Saw it on the monitor last night.
You weren't here last night.
My last night. 35 days ago. We had a meeting here when you were dead. How did you do it? Really, it's not so much to ask. I just said, when you were dead. I know that happens, that you die and come back, as if that's not a huge sacred secret. I'm not even asking you how. I'm not asking a single thing about you, nor am I asking you anything about Dagus. You can keep all those secrets and I'll never bother you about them again. But I want to know how you were able to keep someone who was mortally injured from dying. He stared down at me a moment, then turned away, stalked to the wall, and stared out through the glass at the shadowy, empty, silent clubs below. His shoulders were rigidly contracted, muscles bunching, and the tension in his spine held him as formal as a soldier in full dress uniform. As I watched him, I was startled and a little irked to see him implementing one of my own tactics. The tension began to vanish, starting at eye level. I frowned, wondering if I'd noticed him doing it years ago and copied it from him. I thought I'd invented it. I'd liked thinking I invented it. Only when he was smoothly muscled as a lazing lion did he turn and say,
"Who's hurt that you want me to save?"
I assessed him in silence. I knew why I'd worked so hard preparing my speech. I didn't believe he'd help me. Why would he? He'd never liked Dancer. It's not an issue of hurt, so much as it is. Well, if someone had a bad heart, could you fix it? He narrowed his eyes and stared at me, as if trying to pluck the name from my brain. So I began mentally singing the theme song from Animaniacs that I loved so much when I was a kid, really loud on the top of my brain. It always put me in a great mood. It didn't this time. It's time for Animaniacs, and we're zany to the max, so just sit back and relax. You'll laugh till you collapse. We're Animaniacs. His eyes narrowed to slits.
What the fuck are Animaniacs?
I scowled. I knew you did that to me. You used to do it all the time. Poke around in my head for stuff I didn't feel like telling you. You said you wouldn't do it anymore.
I said, precisely, that I wouldn't do it much. Who has a bad heart?
I dropped back down into the chair and stared up at him. Dancer, I said flatly. He exploded.
What?
And just stared at me for like a whole minute. Finally he said,
Are you bloody kidding me? How bad is it? Is it something he could die from? Soon?
I propped my elbow on my knee, made a fist, propped my chin on top of that, and glared at him. You mean like before he solves the problem you need him to solve? That's all you're worried about. Yes, he could. He has hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, the heart condition that drops athletes like a stone on the basketball court. He stares at me, expressionless, for a long moment, then said,
But he looks so healthy.
So do all those athletes that die on the playing field, I replied coolly. So, can you? He turned back to the wall and stared out through the glass again. I waited in silence. No point in trying to rush Riordan. He was a megaton warship that set sail when it was good and ready. When he finally turned back around, my heart sank like a stone. His silver eyes were cold, remote. Can't or won't, I snarled.
Ah, Jada. Can't.
Bullshit! How did you save Dagus? I demanded. He returned to his chair, sat down, steepled his fingers and studied them.
I can't tell you that,
he said to his hands. Then he glanced at me and said softly,
If there was a way I could help him, I would. And not because I need his help. Because you care about him.
Don't be nice to me, I snapped. His nostrils flared and his eyes narrowed.
Christ, aren't we past this? Did I only imagine that you and I reached a new phase in...
What? Our relationship? Dude, people like you don't have relationships. They have cartels and monopolies and kingdoms and... I couldn't think of another word. Actually, the problem was I couldn't think. Not with my usual cool aplomb. Slaves, I hissed. He gave me an exasperated look.
Danny, you know better than that.
Mac gets to call me Danny. You don't. And no, I don't. You're always manipulating and pushing people around. And trying to control them and... Hey, get off me! What are you doing? He was around the damn desk and had his hands on my shoulders again. Why are you looking at me like that? I snarled. He shook me. Not hard. More a shake of impatience and frustration than a kind of get a grip, Mega.
Let it go, Jada. Just let it go,
he said roughly. The dancer could die, I yelled. You want me to just let that go? Oh, I get it. You think I should just take him out with last night's trash because he's going to die, and it's smarter to stop caring about him right now so it doesn't hurt as much when he does.
That's not what I said. It sounds, however, like something you're trying to sell yourself on,
he clipped. Then just what the hell do you want me to let go? I snarled savagely. Fucking elucidate.
I want you to let the goddamn pain out,
he said sharply.
Rage, cry, hit me, throw things. I don't give a damn. Do whatever you have to do, but let the pain out.
I started to shiver, and I had no clue why. I'd eaten on the way over. I wasn't cold. I felt like my skin was too tight for my body and my chest too small for my heart. I inhaled slow and deep, exhaled slower and even, repeated it.
Don't!
He thundered, shaking me again.
Don't you fucking do that! Don't you go turning it off again!
I said coolly, don't judge me. You have no right. You haven't walked in my shoes.
I'm not judging you. I'm trying to help you see there's another way.
I don't need another way. I knocked his hands off my shoulders. I'm fine. I'm always fine. I always will be.
God damn it, Danny. What do I have to do?
I kicked up into the slipstream and blasted out the door. When it was nearly closed, I heard the thud of a fist hitting the wall, glass breaking, and a violent...
Fuck! God damn! Piss! Fuck!
Danny, out, I whispered tonelessly, and vanished. 38. Do you hear what I hear? Mac. At 5 o'clock that night, the crew, those of us who were going to save our world, began trickling into Baron's books and baubles. I'd pushed the King Chesterfields into two sides of a square in front of the fireplace, and filled the other two sides in with chairs. There was fresh coffee and an assortment of day-old doughnuts on a nearby console that opened on hinged leaves for just such a purpose. It was time to get to work. I'd unearthed the music box from beneath the floorboard in my upstairs bedroom, grabbed the bracelet and binoculars, the three items I'd pocketed for unknown reasons during my dreamy stay in the White Mansion, and brought them downstairs, tucked away in my backpack. I had no idea if all three objects were useful, or even if any of them were, but I couldn't shake the gut feeling that the music box was significant in some way important to our goals. We need a song. It played a song. It had been in the White Mansion. There was something to it, I was certain. There were 8 Fey Hollows, items of extreme importance to the ancient race, the biggest and baddest OOPs of all the OOPs. The 4 Steely Hallows were items that had already been in existence, according to legend, and were gifted to or acquired by the Light Court. There was the Spear of Destiny, the Sword of Light, the Cauldron of Forgetting, and the Enigmatic Stone, whatever that was. Not to be confused with the 4 stones made by the Unseelie King that contained the Shisa Dew. The four Unseelie Hollows were the amulet, the true one Barons had tucked away somewhere, not the three amulets I'd been wearing around my neck earlier that he'd added to his stash for safekeeping, the silvers, the Shisadu, and the mysterious box. Unlike the light Hollows, the dark Hollows hadn't already been in existence. The amulet, silvers, and book were created by the Unseelie King while he was trying to turn his concubine Fae. Logic dictated that the fourth Hollow would also be something created by the king. He'd given the concubine the amulet, and the part of the silvers he'd been able to withhold from the controlling Seelie Queen, but hadn't given her the box, for obvious reasons. He'd also given her the music box, a potent object of power. It seemed perfectly plausible to me that it could be the missing fourth Hollow. The other two items, the binoculars and the bracelet, were indisputably objects of power, but I had no idea what they were or what purpose they served. I had a feeling Cruz might, though. Riordan was the first to arrive, parking his badass matte black military Hummer out front. A few minutes later, Jada roared up on an equally badass motorcycle, parked next to it, and stalked, long-legged and aggressive, into the room, wearing black leather from head to toe, her long, curly red hair flattened into submission and pulled up high in a flawless ponytail. It was instantly evident that there was serious tension between those two, and I sighed. I expected tension between Cruz and Christian, between Cruz and everyone. But sans Cruz, we were the home team. We were supposed to get along. Earlier, Jada had seemed more like Danny. Now she was looking and acting a lot like Jada again. Although it made me sad, I wasn't completely surprised. An iceberg didn't thaw all at once, and I suspected if one did, and were sentient, it would apprehend the rapid liquefaction of itself with horror. Jada was an iceberg. She was melty around the edges. No doubt she was going to vacillate a bit before she let too much of her frosty aloofness thaw further. Melty was good. I could work with it, although I fully intended to find out later what Riordan had done to freeze her up again, and read him the riot act for it. As Jada dropped down in a chair, no surprise there, a sofa would have been a lot like a country, shared with others, and chairs were islands. I arched a brow and said, "Really? A motorcycle? When you can freeze frame?" "It's a Ducati," she corrected stiffly. 1098S. Capable of achieving speeds of up to 271 miles per hour, I finished for her with a smile. I love cars, fast motorcycles, too. I'd once lusted after the Dodge Tomahawk, although it was never really taken seriously as a bike. She didn't smile back. "It's illogical to walk slipstream or not when I can ride, thereby ration protein bars. Don't know why I didn't do it before." Uh-oh. The words "illogical" and "thereby" were back. A sure sign Danny was distancing herself from emotion, but why? And I knew why she'd never ridden a bike before. She loved her city and far preferred navigating it on her own 2 feet, not riding above it on a machine. The Danny I knew liked to feel things. Riordan took a seat on one of the couches in the corner, facing the front door. Yep, that was Riordan, watching the entrance, easy attack or escape. I poured myself a cup of coffee and sank down on the couch, facing the fireplace in the middle, next to Barons, who was in the corner on my right, also facing the door. Christian arrived next, took one look at me and exploded,
"Bloody hell! What happened to you, Mac?"
"No one told you?" I said, surprised. Hastily, I added, "Sorry about the cocoon stuff. It wasn't me."
"I know it wasn't you, but lass, I am never again fishing around in your eye for a wood splinter. You'll go blind before I help you."
My brows climbed my forehead, but I didn't ask. I was too busy being grateful the book hadn't had the spear when it found him. He continued,
"Been busy all day out at the Abbey. Just got the message to meet an hour ago. Couldn't sift in. Barons has the place warded like a Fae Fort Knox."
Although I couldn't see his wings, unless I exerted effort to try, he was using one hell of a glamour. I could tell by the way he was moving his shoulders that his majestic wings were shifting angrily. He opted to stand near the fireplace, and I knew why. You still haven't figured out how to cast a glamour that temporarily displaces your wings, allowing you to sit comfortably, have you? He scowled at me.
Bloody Cruce won't tell me a bloody thing. No one else to ask, but you, lass. What read am I getting off you? And what's with the hair?
She's turning into the Seely Queen, Jada said. Christian just stared at me a long moment, dark brows drawing together. Then his shoulders began to shake, and he threw back his head and laughed.
Well, hell,
he said when he'd finally stopped laughing.
Welcome to the club. Maybe we can figure out this wing thing together.
I said, with no small regret, I don't think I get wings. I never saw them on the Queen. Anybody know if she had wings? Everyone shrugged or shook their heads.
Isn't Cruz supposed to be here?
Christian said. Jada kicked back in her chair, propped her boots on the coffee table, and said coolly, Cruz. The unseelie prince appeared a few feet away from her, looking thunderous, and still more than a little pained by the loss of his wings. He was once again wearing the glamour of Lane, still moving stiffly. He whirled, on instant guard, then stopped moving and murmured,
I've never been inside the bookstore before.
His gaze went everywhere at once.
I assure you, you'll find nothing of interest, or I'd not have permitted you here.
Barons said dryly.
I relocated anything you might have liked seeing before you came. Why have you summoned me?
Cruz demanded. How have you summoned him? I said blankly. Jada tapped her cuff. Now that it's closed, he's as bound to it as the wearer is to him. Near as I could figure, it closed when the book opened the doors to his prison beneath the abbey. I scowled at him. So it was true. If I'd put it on when you'd been posing as Blaine, you'd have been able to summon me any time you wanted.
Why am I here?
Cruz repeated imperiously. He shot me an icy look.
Because you have come to your senses and realized I should be the bearer of the true magic?
You're here, I said evenly. Because if we don't figure out the Song of Making, and in a hurry, you and your entire race will cease to exist. I won't remind you of that again. There will be no dissension or hostility if you want to survive. After we've saved the world, you can fight with me all you want to about who should have the Queen's power.
Promise,
he said silkily. Great. Was there some quirky fey law that allowed him to do formal battle with me for the power if he chose to? I snorted. I'd deal with that later, if so. Dancer arrived last, banging in the door, eyes dancing with excitement.
Hey! Mega! Hey, Mac!
He said enthusiastically.
Hey, guys!
He added, with a nod toward the group.
Damn!
He said, turning in a slow circle.
There's a bloody nuclear load of power in this room!
There certainly was. I only hoped it was enough. Cruz claimed he had no idea what the bracelet and binoculars were, nor did anyone else have any theories. But when I withdrew the glittering music box, the prince's eyes widened faintly, and he moved imperceptibly toward it before checking himself. The squat, square box perched on short, ornate legs and was roughly 8 by 8 inches wide by 4 inches high. But I somehow knew it could open into a vastly different shape and size than it assumed currently. The lid was a softly glowing luminous pearl embedded with winking gems, attached to the base by diamond-crusted hinges. The sides were covered with elaborate gold filigree and embedded with still more gems. There was no lock or visible catch, but when I handed the box to Dancer to inspect, he was unable to open it. Cruz said,
Let me try.
I shook my head as Dancer handed it back to me. Tell me what it is, I parried.
I would need to inspect it more closely in order to do that,
he thrust. Can you wield the Song of Making if we find it? I said. He stared icy daggers at me.
You know I could not.
Then why do you think you can continue to withhold information from me? You're no better than the king. In fact, you're just like him. Wrapped up in your ego and selfish aims, you don't give a damn about your race. All your impressive talk as Valaine about how Cruz was such a hero, standing up for his brothers, a rogue warrior fighting...
Enough!
Cruz thundered so loudly the floor shook. Lamps wobbled on tables, and the sky exploded with the percussion of a sudden storm. The temperature plunged drastically, and the entire bookstore iced. Ceiling, floor, couches, flames in the fireplace, even us. Damn, I thought as I cracked the ice by standing abruptly. That had been impressive. And in order to control this prince, I was going to have to outdo him. But not with ice. That wasn't the Seely way. I summoned the memory of the scent of flowers on the mound beneath three moons and envisioned the bookstore on a sunny summer day. The ice vanished. He gave me a cool, assessing look. Good. I'd rattled him. For whatever reason, he hadn't expected a display of power from me yet. Considering he'd been at Avil's side when she assumed her reign, that must mean it had taken even her time to understand how to use what she'd been given. Eyes narrowed, nostrils flared, I said icily, I don't know what I can and can't do, Cruz, but I will learn, and quickly. And if you make me learn the hard way, I'll turn every bit of it against you. I can be the sheepdog that walks at your side, or I can be the wolf you don't want living in your backyard. The powerful, hungry, savage, and pissed-off wolf, and I promise you, I will delight in destroying your backyard. I have a long memory and few scruples left. It's your call, babe. Did I really just say that? I glanced at Barron's, and the corners of his mouth were twitching faintly as if fighting a smile. Without another word, Cruz vanished. Jada opened her mouth to summon him back. No, I commanded. Let him go. We don't have time for his games. I alone would deal with his games later. I knew Cruz well enough to know that as things stood, he wasn't going to willingly share a single piece of information with us. Only too recently, he'd watched as his queen had bypassed him in favor of a human. And even as Valaine, the prince had always been vain and proud. It was going to take a small miracle to wed him to our aim. I needed time to figure out what that miracle was. Dropping back down to the sofa, I fiddled with the box and eased it open. Even braced as I was for the otherworldly music, it still got me and instantly transported me far, far away. Filled me with such a buoyant sense of freedom and joy that I sat, shivering in near ecstasy, until the exquisite melody abruptly stopped. Then I shivered with sudden cold and isolation, bereft, a true believer, cut off from God. I realized dimly that Barron's had me by the shoulders and was shaking me, roaring,
"Mac!"
straight into my face. I blinked up at him. "What?" I said blankly.
What the hell was that horrific sound?
He demanded. Horrific? It wasn't horrific. It's the most beautiful sound I've ever heard. It hurts to stop hearing it. I glanced around the room for confirmation of my words, reinforcement that there was something wrong with Barron's hearing, not mine. But everyone was looking at me as if I was crazy. Oh, come on! How could you not think that song was beautiful? I glanced at Jada. Wasn't it mind-blowingly amazing to you? She shook her head grimly. It made me want to die. I frowned at Dancer.
Ditto,
he said roughly.
That was pure hell.
I looked back at Barron's, who nodded, then at Christian and Riordan, who nodded in turn.
Made my bloody skin crawl,
Christian said tightly. I shot Riordan a look. What did it make you feel? He gave me a penetrating look and said carefully,
"Like I was having a hard time holding on to my skin."
My eyes widened as I got the message, and my gaze flew back to Barron's. His dark eyes gleamed.
"We both nearly changed. Had to fight it with everything I had."
I frowned down at the music box, wondering what in the world it was, and why only I could hear the exquisite melody it played. We wrapped up a little over an hour later, having accomplished pretty much jack shit. No one had been willing to let me open the music box again, although Dancer asked me to bring it by the lab the next day. Everyone agreed that it shouldn't be permitted out of my or Baron's hands, as Cruz had clearly coveted it and could easily take it from Dancer.
I'll listen to it again tomorrow, but I want to hear it at my lab. I think there's something to it. Any frequency that has such a profound effect demands further inquiry. It felt like the devil's tritone to an exponential degree.
He told me, grimacing as he reflected on it. He paused at the door, ready to leave, and glanced back at Jada, a smile lighting his face.
You coming?
She gave him a cool look. Something came up. Rain check. His smile faltered. Though he tried to quickly conceal his disappointment, it was evident for all to see. Raiden said,
I don't need you tonight after all, Jada. Go with him. Take the night off.
Her head whipped his way and she glared daggers at him.
Cool,
Dancer enthused.
Let's go.
He was back to being happy again. Raiden's issues weren't the only things that came up, Jada said tonelessly. I'm busy. Raiden said in a voice I'd never heard before and couldn't even peg the emotion of.
Jada, go with him now.
They locked gazes for a long moment. Then she stood, bristling, blasted past Dancer and stormed out the door, tossing a, come on, let's go, over her shoulder to the bewildered-looking young man. Once they were gone, I said to Raiden, what on earth happened between you two? Last thing I remember is you saving her from the fire. I thought she'd appreciate that.
She did. Even bloody thanked me. But then something else happened.
I waited. He assessed me a moment, taking in the Khaleesi blonde hair, lingering on my eyes a long moment.
I'll be damned. You really are turning fey. Do they have the power to heal human bodies?
I pondered that a moment, then said, I believe they do to some degree, but I don't know how, nor do I know how fully. I suspect they use the elixir of life to heal serious wounds on the exceedingly rare occasion they want to keep a mortal alive, and that has a serious side effect. Immortality. Why? Who's injured? And can't you do anything about it?
Not something of this severity. This is beyond my ability to affect unless I did the same thing I did to Dagus.
Barons growled.
Which you are never doing again. I have no intention of it. I doubt he'd survive it anyway. He's not the right raw material.
He who? I demanded.
Dancer,
Raiden said tightly.
He has a congenital heart problem, apparently quite serious.
I went rigid. Danny adored him. They had something more than mere friendship. Once, long ago, she'd blushed when she told me he'd given her a bracelet. I'd often wondered if a romance might bloom between them, and as she continued to thaw, becoming more like Danny and less like Jada, he seemed the perfect fit. The right young man to make her feel alive again, perhaps recapture a sense of innocence. Whether or not that happened, it would still break her heart to lose him. And she'd already had more than her share of heartache and loss. Why him, of all people? This is complete and utter bullshit, I seethed.
I agree,
Raiden said grimly as he vanished out the door. 39. Riders on the Storm. Into this house we're born. Jada. I threw my leg across the Ducati, glanced back at Dancer to motion him to get on behind me, then shot right back off it and growled, I changed my mind, let's walk. If I crashed the bike, no big to me. Every big to him. Besides, he was already excited enough about Mac and the song and music box. I didn't want him getting any more excited. Don't kill the boy before he's dead, Jada, Raijin had said with his cool silver gaze moments earlier. You'll hate yourself for it one day. Go talk with him. He was right, but I would certainly have appreciated a little more time to deal with the unpleasant reality of Dancer's flawed biology before having to deal with the very pleasant reality of Dancer, alive and laughing and ready to tear off on her next reckless adventure. Which would never happen again, because he wasn't blowing out his heart on my watch. That was something I'd really hate myself for, and not one day, instantly.
Ah, come on,
he protested.
I've never ridden a Ducati before. Show me what it can do.
I was gripped by a sudden fierce desire to protect him, or lock him up somewhere and never even let him breathe hard. Seriously, I want to walk. I loped off down the street, knowing he'd follow. He didn't. But I didn't figure that out for a block and a half, when I turned to snatch a sideways glance at him, see if I saw any signs of strain in his face, if I was walking too fast. I was alone, confirming how off-kilter I was. With my senses, I should have registered that I wasn't hearing him. I spun around, peering into the night. There he was, way down the street, still standing in front of Baron's books and baubles, arms folded over his chest, leaning against a street lamp. I felt my chest grow tight and caught my breath. I'd always thought he was attractive, now even more so with the amber glow of the gas lamp burnishing his dark hair with a kiss of gold, his eyes the color of tropical sea surf. It made me feel perversely mad at him. What the hell are you doing? I snapped.
Waiting for you to come back here and tell me what the bloody hell is wrong with you.
He snapped back. A dozen caustic replies took shape on my tongue, but all that came out was a soft, miserable sigh. There he stood, 6'4" of solid, healthy man, but the heart inside his athletic body didn't possess the same strength. What kind of universe pulled such a dickhead stunt? And why him? Why not, say, someone mean and deceitful like Marjorie, or someone evil like Rowena? But no. That old bitch had lived well into her 80s. I sank down cross-legged on the sidewalk as the unthinkable happened and tears stung my eyes. I ducked my head so he wouldn't see it, so he'd think I was just being stubborn and staying where I was, making him come to me. A few seconds later, I glanced up and saw the weirdest thing. Dancer was hurrying down the street toward me. But that's not what was weird. Raijin was the weird thing. He was standing outside the bookstore, staring down the street at us, hands fisted at his sides, looking, quite possibly, angrier than I'd ever seen him. And I've seen that dude 10 shades beyond pissed, well into homicidal fury. I knew he could see the faint shimmer of moisture on my cheeks. Eagle eyes once saw a drop of moisture on an ice sculpture I hadn't been able to see. I gave him a look and a shrug like, "What? You wanted me to cry and let it out, just doing what you told me. Are you ever happy with a damn thing I do?" Then I flipped him off. Shit. I plunged the defiant hand into my pocket. That wasn't me. That was someone I used to be. What the hell was happening to my center? But I knew the answer to that. First Shazam, now Dancer. Did the universe harbor a secret grudge against me? Was it not going to be happy until it had stolen everyone I cared about? I wasn't flipping you off, I told Dancer as he approached. But when Dancer glanced back to see who'd pissed me off, Raijin was gone.
Kiva told you, didn't she?
Dancer said a short time later, as he handed me a heaping bowl of mixed fruit topped with whipped cream.
She promised me she would never talk to you about it. I told her you knew, but hated discussing it.
I nodded. I'd eliminated all trace of tears by the time Dancer had reached me, and if he'd noticed my eyes were red, he chose not to comment. I didn't understand the point of crying. All you got from it was a stuffed-up nose and a short-lived headache. And I was always dangerously hungry afterward. It didn't solve a thing. It didn't change a thing. It only made you feel worse.
How much did she tell you?
He asked, motioning me to follow him into the living room. You never brought me here before, I dodged, wondering what he meant by How much? Hadn't she told me the worst? I terminated that thought and resumed studying his digs. Here was the top floor of an old firehouse that overlooked the River Liffey, and had been converted into a huge one-room loft, partitioned with furniture placement into kitchen, living room, and bedroom. Thick cream sheepskin rugs covered well-worn hardwood floors. The furnishings were simple, modern, comfortable. The entire wall facing the river was window from floor to ceiling. I stared out, watching the silvery slide of water, wishing I could slide off on it.
This is where I live most of the time. I kept a lot of other places because I never knew what part of town you might be hanging out in.
You lived two completely separate lives, one with me and one without.
Yes.
Why didn't you tell me you had, you know...
A bad heart? You'd have disappeared and I'd have never seen you again. There was no room in your world for anything less than a superhero. I'm not sure there is now either.
I said fiercely, I'm here, aren't I? And I didn't want to be. I wanted to be anywhere else. Doing something with purpose that made me feel good, not staring into death's impersonal jaws as they tried to close on one of the few people I wanted to see often, and couldn't wait to see each time so we could blurt out everything we thought to each other. At 14, there'd never been a sense of urgency. We'd been kids. We were going to live forever. He was always going to be somewhere around the next corner. Not.
Yes, but to what degree and... With what new conditions that must be met?
He countered.
I knew the second you didn't want me on the Ducati that you'd found out. Then you slow-mo Joe walked down the street. You never do that. Is that how we're going to be now? Dancer's so fragile that Dancer doesn't get to do anything not mega-approved. And that might not even include something so strenuous as swatting a fly.
Sounded bloody good to me. I spooned up fruit and swallowed, but it got stuck on a lump in my throat. I coughed and spat it back out into the bowl. He was beside me in an instant, ready to give me the Heimlich, as he had so many times in the past when I'd wolfed my food too fast to swallow. I'd let you swat a fly, I said crossly. He smiled faintly.
Yeah, but would you let me swat a bee?
Probably.
How about set off a bomb and outrun it?
That's a fucking-lutely not.
Then I guess we can't be friends anymore. Because I will set off bombs and outrun them. And I will get to climb on that big, beautiful bike of yours and wrap my arms around you and lean into all that gorgeous hair and smell you. And hear you laugh and see your eyes flash fire. Or I may as well just kick it right now because you, Danny Mega O'Malley, make me feel alive like nothing else does. And I don't want to miss a moment of it.
I forgot how to breathe. Wrap his arms around me, he'd said. He thought I had gorgeous hair, and my eyes flashed fire. I deflected instantly. Smell me? How it smell bad, like blood and guts and sweat.
You smell fearless, and you smell good a lot. Like fall leaves, hot apple cider spiked with dark rum, and a fire topped with twigs of sassafras. You smell like life and the kind of days I want to enjoy while I'm here. Do you have any idea how I felt when you came back older? I was so pissed that you'd gone off and lived so much life without me getting to be there for any of it. But then I thought the angels must have heard my prayers to let me live long enough to kiss you. Not a 14-year-old kiss, a 19-year-old kiss. A really hot... sexy 19-year-old kiss.
He grinned.
Assuming you don't have a problem with younger men. Do you have a problem with younger men, Mega?
I ignored the part about kissing. That was too much for my ears to hear right now. He was trying to not only insist that I face his heart issue, but kissing too? That was total bullshit. You've got to be shitting me, I said coolly. You not only want us to stay friends, you want me to care about you even more? Are you batshit crazy? Or do you think I am?
Yes, no, and no,
he said evenly.
Or will you only care about someone you know will live forever?
Like that even exists? I evaded.
I happen to know it does. I watched two of Riordan's men die. They showed up fine a week later. I'm not stupid, Mega.
I barely managed to conceal a wince. Bloody hell! If Riordan knew Dancer knew that, I wouldn't have to worry about his heart killing him. Riordan would. He reached for my hand, but I snatched it away, then tried to soften the insult by using it to tighten my ponytail. Ire flashed in his eyes, but faded quickly. He gave a snort of soft, wry laughter.
Mum had the same reaction when she found out. Pretty much everyone in my life did. It was years before people stopped acting weird around me.
I asked stiffly, how did you find out?
I died. I was playing soccer with friends and suddenly I couldn't breathe. I'd been having problems breathing for days, but hell, I was a kid and it was a hot summer. We don't pay any attention to that kind of stuff. We don't know diseases like hypertrophic cardiomyopathy exist. I didn't even know diseases exist. Life had been a long, endless summer for me up until then.
Did you really die?
Sure did. Flatlined. I was gone for 3.5 minutes. Then my heart just started up again. No clue why. I was unconscious when the ambulance took me to the hospital and they lost me on the way there. Then I was just back. Mom said it was because I had something important to do. I didn't tell her that suddenly everything seemed important to do.
When he reached for my hand this time, I let him take it and lead me to the couch. Suddenly, all my usual reactions were suspect. I was seeing each of them as potentially the last thing I'd ever do with him. I put my bowl of fruit on the coffee table, no longer hungry. As I sank down and tucked my legs beneath me, he reached for a pack of matches and lit 2 candles on the table in front of us, put the matches back down, and stood looking at me for a long moment.
"Do you know how beautiful you are?"
he finally said. I shrugged it off. "I figured it out, Silverside." He burst out laughing.
"Christ, I should have known that'd be your response. You clinically assessed yourself. Decided you were symmetrical and your features met some obscure mathematical criteria. You had gorgeous skin and flaming hair to top it off, and were therefore beautiful.
That had pretty much been it. That and my appearance had proved an effective distraction in battle with men.
So,
he said, taking a seat next to me.
What did Kiva tell you?
I was more acutely aware of his body next to mine than I'd ever been. His sudden impermanence seemed to erase all filters from my vision, leaving only a young, very hot, very brilliant man that I cared deeply about. Only the diagnosis. I didn't want to know, and I had to know. How bad is it? He looked away a moment, and when he looked back at me, he said,
Let's put it this way. I know I have to live each day to the fullest, and I've known that for a long time.
I suddenly understood something I'd never been able to fathom about him before. He'd always been completely unfazed by folks like Barons and Riordan, Christian, even the Fae, and I'd endlessly wondered why. I'd admired him enormously for it, been quietly proud of him each time he stood his ground with such powerful immortals, because it had never been bluster, just confidence and laissez-faire equanimity. I knew why now. He'd been living with a threat of death most of his adult life. Kiva loves you, I told him, with absolutely no idea why I just said that. Apparently he liked hearing it, though, because his grin widened.
I know.
His response left me feeling unsatisfied and weirdly anxious. I know? That was it? Did he love her? Were they boyfriend and girlfriend? On the verge of setting up house together, did he bring her here? Crepes. Maybe she'd picked out his furnishings for him, brought him the rugs and candles. I was out of here. I couldn't deal with this, any of it. I turned away and began to push up, then glanced back and said, So, are you and Kiva? I trailed off as I sank back down. I was out of my depth. I wanted to leave. I couldn't leave. My butt was a spring that couldn't make up its mind, bouncing me off the sofa, dragging me back. I was conflicted by the sure knowledge that the hands of time were eating away at one more thing in my life. Clocks. Of course. Kill the clocks, those time-thieving bastards, he'd written. He'd been telling me, in his own way, the night he gave me the poem and the bracelet. That time was short, and every moment mattered. I closed my eyes, recalling the last stanza. It had been his wake-up call, the one he'd been trying to get me to hear, without incurring the risk of me refusing to accept it and running away.
Kill the clocks and live in the moment. No cogs or gears can steal our now. When you laugh with me, Mega, time stands still. In that moment, I'm perfect somehow.
Being with me gave him that. The feeling of being unhunted. Unhunted by the ancient eternal footman who was holding his coat at the ready, any day, any time.
What are you trying to ask me?
He said levelly. Do you and... I trailed off again. He let the silence stretch, watching me intently, gaze shifting from my right eye to my left and back again. Finally, he prodded gently.
What, Meg? What do you want to know?
Have you and Kiva... Oh, bugger it. Dancer, help me out here.
You want to know if we're lovers?
He said, with such quiet maturity that I shifted uncomfortably. He hadn't said boyfriend or date. He'd used a word that had made me abruptly picture his long, strong body stretched out on top of Kiva as he whispered something passionate in her ear, regarded her with desire, and it made my stomach feel hot and tight.
Why is that so hard to ask? You just have to say, Dancer, are you Kiva's lover?
I scowled, poised on the verge of freeze-framing out the door and never coming back. He leaned back, kicked his long legs up on the coffee table, and spread his arms wide along the back of the sofa, and I got the distinct impression he knew exactly how good it made him look, showing off his pecs and those arms he'd worked so hard to make cut and strong, arms that could wrap around me when we rode the Ducati. He flashed me a smile.
Nah, I'm still a virgin.
I gaped with disbelief. You are?
Hey. I'm only 17. It's not that unusual.
But you might have... I mean, you knew that... I trailed off.
I was born with a shorter fuse than most.
He finished for me, evenly. I nodded.
So, what? I was supposed to jump out there and grab whatever I could get my hands on while I had the chance? You know I'm discriminating, Mega. On the contrary. It made me want to ensure that every experience I had really counted. That it'd be the best it could be, or not happen at all. I didn't want to rack up bad memories. No regrets.
I understood that. We were so different, yet so much the same.
We're totally different,
he said, like he was reading my mind.
But so much the same. You were born super everything. Super strong and smart. Super hearing. Smell, eyesight, and super freaking fast. Man, I love that one. I think your speed demon power is the one I'd want the most. And I was born super. Well, not weak, but with a flaw in my design. After I died when I was 8 years old and discovered what was wrong with me.
You were 8 when you died. I'd been 8 too, and I'd pretty much given up the ghost. He nodded.
Yeah. Dying did the same thing to me all your superpowers did to you. Made me fearless.
You do realize a lot of people wouldn't have taken that lesson away from it. They would have felt more vulnerable and been more careful with themselves.
I saw something that day, Mega, during those 3.5 minutes, and I know that there's more after this. I have faith, and it's strong. I'm not afraid. Death is just the door to the next big adventure.
Yeah, well, that was a door I wasn't letting open for him for a long, long time. I used to wonder if you had some secret superpower, I told him. I saw you walking down the street one day, and the ZEWs peeled away from you like you were one of Baron's dudes or something. A dazzling grin lit up his face.
Yeah, they do, don't they? Talk about perplexing the fuck out of Riordan,
he said, and laughed.
Should have seen his face the day I was with him. Barons and Mac and the ZEWs gave me the same wide berth they gave him in Barons. It was priceless. I've got the Rhino boys' number, and a few other lower castes, too. But I haven't made progress with the higher castes yet. Got diverted, working on the song.
He reached down and pushed up the cuff of his jeans, revealing a sort of watch strapped around his ankle with a small black cube attached to it, covered with blinking lights.
I got started thinking one night about how the Fae are made of energy and how dogs and invisible fences and silent whistles and things like that work. So I began experimenting with the transmitter, modulating and testing frequencies on the Fae, goal being to repel, not kill. Sometimes we set our sights too high when a lesser goal would be both quicker to attain and virtually as effective. I figured if I could invent something that kept all the Fae away from you, well, I'd be the shit.
You're already the shit dancer, I told him.
Yeah, but I want to be even shittier shit,
he said, and waggled his brows at me. I smiled, forcing myself not to let the sadness I felt show. I couldn't do that to him. It wouldn't be fair. You're the shittiest shit I know, and probably ever will. He sobered quickly, looking into my eyes, studying me with unnerving intensity.
Shittier than Riordan?
I was instantly wary, defensive. What do you mean? What does Riordan have to do with any of what we're talking about?
Don't be a porcupine, Mega. Not prying or judging. It's just that sometimes I think you... Well, maybe you... The two of you,
He broke off, sighed, and shoved a hand into his thick hair, ruffling it.
I'll never be like him. I'm not wired that way. I'm a brainy, geeky 17-year-old with a bad heart. Not much makes me feel insecure, but that dude does. He's everything you are, and I'm not.
I bristled. Don't you ever tell me you have a bad heart. Never say those words again. You've got the biggest heart in the world. You bring out the best in everyone around you, and people love you. But you're right, you're not like him and never will be. He shifted uncomfortably and went crazy on his hair again, running both hands through it. I let him stew for a moment, trying to absorb this bizarre moment, that he cared about me enough that it made him, the man not even death-rattled, feel insecure. Then I got distracted watching his arms. Now that I knew how perilous working out was for him, I admired even more deeply the patient will that had found a way to work within limits that would have made a lot of other people give up. I'd learned at a young age that every day mattered, that killing time was the worst thing you could do to it. Dancer had learned it too.
Wow. Not helping much here,
he muttered. I caught one of his hands in mine and slowly laced our fingers together. I'd never taken a man's hand of my own desire before. Open to the moment and what that moment might bring. I was in such uncharted territory, and this was so not the way I'd always imagined it going down. Not that anything was going down. That would be like willingly ascending the mountain of stupidity to perch on the apex right before the inevitable avalanche came along and wiped you out. And that was never going to happen. But I wasn't averse to admiring the mountain from the foothills. Riordan's strength comes from knowing he's strong, I told him. Your strength comes from knowing you're not. You're the one with the superpower in my book, and it's only one of the many you have. His smile was blinding.
Mega, I'm going to kiss you now.
I inhaled deep, exhaled slow. We'd never gone here, and once we did, there would be no turning back. Our friendship would be forever changed. You can't unkiss a man you've kissed. I let him. 40. Desperately in need of some stranger's hand in a desperate land. Zara. She stood motionless, staring around in disbelief. Was this a joke? Zara glanced up at the lighted sign that swayed on a striped pole above her head, proclaiming, "The Stag's Head," then back at the door behind her through which she'd just exited. It wasn't the door she stepped into. Not even close. She'd been entering a doorway in the sunny yellow part of the White Mansion, and the moment she passed beneath the transom, felt resistance and something diverting her sideways, casting her down a different path. Out through a completely different door. Into night in Dublin. She narrowed her eyes, scowling. Earth was the last place she wanted to be. She wasn't dying on this world. She was done with this planet and every other that had ever hosted the Fey race. Nor was she staying in the White Mansion and living her final days in the cage the king had designed for her. Upon leaving the boudoir, she'd been making her way to the Passion Muse's garden, the one with the silvery fountain and the fabulous sunroom, the one that took her, if she passed far beyond it and went through many portals, back out into the flow of time, on another world, far, far from there. She'd found it eons ago, had on her saddest days gone walking and walking, uncaring, taking paths and finally portals at random. The small planet reminded her of her home, and she'd wondered if the king put it there deliberately, knowing she'd find it, giving her an escape route because each year, century, millennium she didn't use it, he'd continue to know she'd truly chosen him over all else. That was just like him. He'd required endless reassurance that she was happy, that she wanted to be where he'd put her. She'd intended to go to that small world now and die there, alone, when the Earth ceased to exist, and so did she. But no. She was in dirty, human Dublin. Gathering her cloak around her, she whirled and stepped back through the door of the pub. And entered only the pub. She hissed, "This is unacceptable."
"Ah, unacceptable,"
the Tamura squawked.
"I will not be trifled with. Show me the way back."
"Ah, the way back,"
the Tamura agreed. Dust mote sparkled in a ray of moonlight that spilled through a broken window, spiraling suspended in a gentle, relentless current. Was the king watching her? Still manipulating her? The idea was infuriating. She was not his toy, his plaything. She was a woman who would be free. He owed her that much. They'd tried, they'd failed, it was time to let go. Why would he send her to Dublin? "What do you want from me?" she demanded.
"Ah, what do you want?"
the Tamura echoed. Lips thinning, Zara whirled and stormed back through the doorway, willing it to transport her instantly to the sunny floors of the White Mansion. A piece of toilet paper stuck to her silk slipper, and she stubbed her toe on a piece of broken concrete she hadn't seen in the dark. Still in Dublin.
"Hey!"
a male voice called out.
"Are you all right? Can I help you with anything?"
She spun stiffly toward the intruder in the endless fey drama that was her life, and her eyes widened infinitesimally. A man was hurrying toward her, and as he moved into the pool of light cast by the street lamps outside the pub, she realized he was a very attractive one. Lovely. In the way that had made the Fae occasionally abduct one of them. Young, strong, with dark hair, the lithe body of a dancer and beautiful eyes. "I'm fine," she said tightly.
"You don't look fine to me. This city can be a dangerous place, especially for a woman alone at night in such attire. Come, let's find you different clothing. There's a store down the street."
Zara belatedly recalled the diaphanous gown she wore beneath her cloak that revealed all, concealed nothing, and glamoured it instantly into a more solid gown, whirling it to a soft, solid yellow. Nothing happened. The young man narrowed his eyes.
"Fae? Or human?"
She yanked her cloak tightly around her body and sifted him into a different, far-off city. He stood there, gaze fixed on her face, awaiting her reply. She'd had no idea what fate befell queens who transferred their power before their time, and was discovering it the hard way. His question was a valid one.
She wasn't sure what she was anymore either. She glanced at the debris on the cobbled street, spied a bottle, stooped, seized it and shattered it, shoved her sleeve up, and used the bit of glass on her arm. A thin